might sound alike, they don't all work alike. Juniper Networks. Learn more at thenewnetworkishere.com.
It's time for Fed Talk, the live show for feds in the know. From federal agencies to Capitol Hill, the attorneys of Shaw, Bransford, and Roth bring in experts from across the federal community to bring you inside the issues. Fed Talk is meant to provide general information about legal issues. However, the views expressed in this program are not intended to provide legal counseling. Listeners are cautioned not to rely upon any statements made in resolving legal issues they may face, but instead to consult with their own attorney about specific situations. Attorneys are not engaged in providing legal services while appearing on the program and are not responsible in any manner for the consequences that may stem directly or indirectly from reliance on any statement made during this program.
Good morning and welcome to Fed Talk. I'm Deborah Roth, and today I'm joined by federal career coach Lily Whiteman. She's been a regular of ours on our show. We're so glad to have her back. Lily's going to be speaking with us today about the federal hiring process and if you are looking for a federal job, how to land a great federal job. If you have a federal job, she's a noted career coach and career counselor. And Lily's here to answer your questions about how to take your federal career where it is today and move it in the direction you want it to go. If you have a question for our guest, Lily Whiteman, please give us a call toll-free. We're at 1-877-936-9333. You can email your question to us. Our email address is fedtalk@federalnewsradio.com. And just a reminder for our listeners that Fed Talk is brought to you by GEICO, where 15 minutes can save you 15% on car insurance. For more information on GEICO, go to their website, geico.com. So, good morning, Lily.
Great to be here. Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you for coming back and joining us again on Fed Talk. Lily tries to get in here about once a year, catch up on some of the new federal hiring issues that are out there. We actually have some things to talk about today. For those of you who don't know who Lily Whiteman is, you can go to her website, type in to your search engine how to land a top paying federal job. Lily's the author of that book. And
also, you can just go to igotthejob.net.
That's her website. And you can read all about Lily and the book and multitask while we interview her here today. So, Lily, you are one of the top noted experts on how to get a federal job, how to advance your federal career. And I guess what's really interesting to me is that you're a Fed yourself.
Right. And I practice what I teach. Yes, I'm a longtime federal writer. And that's kind of the perspective I bring to the book, is an insider's view. And that's really why I wrote the book, is when I discovered that despite the fact that the federal government is the nation's largest employer.
It's the world's largest single employer, right. The federal executive branch.
Right.
Which up until about a couple of years ago was 1.8 million. And now the stat is it's creeped up past 1.9. It's around 2 million.
Right.
2 million, it's one single employer.
Sounds like you should be on Jeopardy with those statistics rolling off your tongue.
I know, but it's huge. That's a lot of people.
It's huge, and it amazed me that there was no book by an insider out there on how to work the system. And you really have to know how the system works in order to work the system. And that's the perspective I bring, is of somebody who has worked the system, helped other people work the system, taught people how to work the system. And I've been a hiring manager as well. So that, and I also tried to bring a really reader-friendly perspective to it I try to be humorous and lighthearted and
all of the things that you genuinely are, if anyone ever knew, Lily. And the book, you've had this edition out for a while. When did you write the book? About how long ago?
I wrote the book about 4 years ago, but it took a couple of years. So
yeah.
I stopped writing it a couple of years ago. And I tell people that I wrote it on the 9-to-5 shift, the 9 p.m. to 5 a.m. shift, and then I'd get up and go to work. So it was a labor of love.
Yeah. Tell us about, the book is called How to Land a Top-Paying Federal Job, and they can find it on your website, igotthejob.net. Tell us what's in the book. Why would somebody buy the book?
Well, it gives a start-to-finish explanation, again, from the insider view, and also incorporating a lot of research. I've interviewed over 100 hiring managers and continue to research, interview them all the time, on everything from how to find the juicy openings and the unadvertised openings, not just USJ jobs. There's a lot of backdoor and other front doorways into the government. Finally into negotiating salary and then climbing up once you get into the government. And there is no other book on the market or any resources really to tell people how to negotiate the salary. And that is hugely important because it, over the course of a career, it can be worth hundreds of thousands of dollars, really.
Mm-hmm. And sort of the viewpoint or the perspective that many people, novices, have when they're, you know, trying to get a federal position or moving, you know, have one and trying to move up the ranks, is that salaries aren't negotiable. It's all based upon the general schedule and then the steps inside the schedule. But actually, if you know what you're doing, you actually can negotiate your way through the schedule, the general schedule. And we are going to talk with you a little bit about how to negotiate today in today's environment, you know, how to negotiate a salary. The book is available on your website. People can buy it on your website?
Well, I've got the links to Barnes & Noble's and Amazon.com, and so you can go to those sites directly to get it, or it's in many bookstores as well.
And you told us what inspired you to write the book. And in addition to the book, you're also a career coach today.
Yeah, because I do have a full-time federal job, which puts a crimp in my day, I really can't give...
I'm sure the people you work with are glad to hear that, right?
Right. I meant in terms of time. It takes a huge chunk out of my day. So I don't have the time to give clients one-on-one help as much as they would deserve. So I do a shotgun method. I give seminars through professional organizations and government agencies that have training programs. I give seminars on covering what's in my book as well.
And, you know, we're going to talk here today about the federal hiring process, which for some people, some of our listeners might know that there's some proposed legislation to, quote unquote, revamp it. There's a move again inside this administration. I think every administration moves to revamp the federal hiring process. But you know, from a bird's eye view, Lily, what are the pros and cons with today's federal hiring process?
Well,
the good and the bad.
The good, the bad, the ugly. There's a few things that the government has over private sector, and that in an announcement, they'll tell you what the salary range is, for example, and private sector jobs never do that, and that wastes a lot of people's time.
It's also in the private sector, people feel like it's a gotcha that you go in, you have a number, and you have no idea what they were prepared to pay you.
Right.
You could have shot too low. The government, at least, it's full disclosure.
Right, right. So you know your negotiating range going in. So that's one thing. And also, the government really is obliged and in most cases does review every application, and private sector really doesn't have to do that. They can go straight into the circular file. So that's important that you, even though most people think the federal hiring system is a big black hole, every application, generally speaking, does get looked at.
Hmm. And that's interesting that those two perspectives on what's good about the system. In your list of maybe what needs some improving or fixing in the federal system, what tops your list?
Well, there, to be full disclosure, and everybody knows this, there are pre-selected positions. And I think that federal hiring managers should be given a mechanism to hire, to promote from within if somebody has proved themselves without putting it out for advertisement and inviting people to apply who probably won't get the job.
Mm.
I think that's hugely important. And I think that.
And you think it's important because the people on the outside who are applying, putting time and effort, you're saying they really don't have an appreciation that maybe it's already stacked in favor of somebody.
But I do tell people, even if they suspect something is pre-selected, to apply anyway, because sometimes pre-selected jobs end up not being pre-selected because the pre-selected person didn't end up applying for it, got another job, decided they didn't want it, was late in submitting their applications. I've seen that happen many times. So I always say put as many eggs in your basket as possible. I think also there's a lot of defects in the electronic systems that government agencies use, and in some cases they really serve as an electric moat, keeping people out of the government rather than inviting them and having quick processes. Like, in order to get started on just looking at the questions in an application, the first time, you've got to register on the system, which requires a lot of time and ask for information, sometimes really right down to your mother's maiden name.
just to apply.
Just to look at the questions. You see an announcement, you follow the links in order to apply, to look at the application, and even if you're not, just to scope it out, you've got to put all that information in. And that's a hugely burdensome and frustrating task. So,
and for many people, they may feel, what would the government need to know that for? And there's some probably absurd, non-thought-out bureaucratic reason. But for people who feel, you know, electronic privacy issues,
right,
they're like, why do they need to know that? Just so I can see the questions to the application.
Right, like a Social
I'm not
Security.
Even applying.
Right, right, right. So they start perpetuating that feeling that government is just horrible red tape, and that immediately alienates some great qualified people.
We are going to take our first break, but I do want to follow up with you, Lily, when we come back about some other weaknesses or areas of improvement that the federal, from your viewpoint, the federal hiring system is in dire need of. But we do need to take our first break. You're listening to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
And now, a word from our good friends at GEICO, where you could save 15% on car insurance. When you say that you work for the federal government, many people out there immediately picture you wearing a suit, driving a government-issue sedan, and living in D.C. While that may be true for some, in reality, federal employees have a wider variety of jobs than most people could ever imagine, from postal workers to CIA agents, from working in an office to working in outer space. These jobs are all so different that it's hard to believe they have something in common, but they do. And that similarity is GEICO. As employees of the federal government, many of these people may be eligible for additional discounts on top of GEICO's already low rates. And just because the cost is lower doesn't mean that GEICO's service is anything less than top rate. So whether you're in animal control or air traffic control, call GEICO at 1-800-947-AUTO. Or go online to geico.com and find out how much you could save.
Welcome back to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Deborah Roth, and I have with me today Lily Whiteman. She's a very noted federal career coach. Lily Whiteman is also the author of How to Land a Top-Paying Federal Job. You can find that book on her website, igotthejob.net. If you have a question or a comment for Lily, a question about something that you've experienced or think you may experience in the federal career hiring process, give us a call, toll-free, 1-877-936-9333, or you can email your question to Lily. Our email address is fedtalk@federalnewsradio.com. So, Lily, before the break, we were talking about, from your perspective, some of the more macro issues, weaknesses, problems that you see, someone who's a noted federal career coach, that you see in the federal hiring process. For the average person who applies, it's just the overwhelming sort of burdensomeness of getting one application in. But you've given us some really good insights, sort of picking it apart. Any others that sort of come to mind when you look at the whole process?
Well, of course, one that leaps out is the KSAs, which are reviled by one and all.
right. And knowledge, skills, and abilities.
Application essays that are kind of like the questions you answer to get into college on the college applications. And there are oftentimes quite a few of these questions, and it's a very laborious task to write those essays. And a big mistake that a lot of people make is they just say, I don't have time for this. I'm going to apply without writing the KSAs. And that's an automatic killer for an application. You'll just get completely wiped out from the get-go. And the basic principle, one of the reasons I think they're there is as a screening process, that the people who aren't willing to ruin an otherwise enjoyable weekend churning out those essays sabotage themselves, so it makes the application pack smaller. And oftentimes also these questions are very repetitive. They ask the same thing over and over again. So people are wondering, how can I, what are they asking me for that I'm not giving them when they're not? They're just not thought out questions. So those are some biggies. And also every application should have a contact person that, the applicant can contact to ask where their application is in the process, if a decision has been made, if they have questions about the job itself. Many do, but many don't.
Yeah, many don't. And there's a lot that come, that the government issues, you know, just in my practice of law, you know, I'm always in correspondence with the government, and the government frequently will respond without a contact information, without a name, without a phone number. I mean, they clearly signaling, don't call us.
Right. And when they do communicate, it's often not in reader-friendly language. I was off one of my previous jobs when I got the email offering me the job. I literally didn't know that this was a job offer. It was written in such bureaucratic, bungled language. I'm like, what is this? So I could have easily not shown up for the job just because I didn't know I had been accepted for it. So,
Okay. And then the other obvious one that sort of comes to mind about the whole federal hiring process is it takes so absurdly long. And generally, during that time period, there's no communication with the applicants.
Although that has gotten somewhat better with email communications. And I think that's a terrible thing, and it makes people twist in the wind torturously. But I will also say that when you apply for jobs in the private sector, you don't want to know what happens to them either, and they don't communicate with you. It's just by virtue of the fact that job hunting is unpleasant, and you're in a powerless position, basically.
Well, that, you know, that's sort of an interesting take. I guess maybe the view is that because it's the federal employer, the number one public employer, it is the government, that there's some sort of, you know, and they always refer to themselves as the model employer, that they owe the applicant something more than maybe what the private sector, the way the private sector would treat you, you know, if you were applying to one of the blue chip big companies that also have their bureaucratic ways of processing, you know, hiring, firing, whatever it is they do. But that is sort of interesting. You know, on average, I heard, and the stat's been this way for years, that it takes 6 months from application to entry date if you actually got the job. Six months.
And that is an average. It varies quite a bit. I've seen people get snapped up really quickly and called for interviews right after the job closed. And, you know, I've seen it go on for many, many months too. So,
you know, and before the recession, when the job applicant pool may not have been as abundant, one of the other criticisms I used to hear sort of from the perspective of agencies that whose job it was to oversee the process or to evaluate it, GAO, MSPB, you know, who would do sort of an overall government evaluation of its hiring process, is that in many instances, if the process took that long, 6 months from application to hiring, that your best candidate has already moved on, gotten another job.
Right. And organizations like the Merit System Protection Board have issued report after report for years on this, saying the same thing, saying the same common sense things of speed this up and all the things we're talking about to improve it.
And, you know, I always sit back and I say, you know, it's such a large employer. And while it's viewed as a single employer because you have the single, you know, the USA Jobs, because, I mean, I certainly remember before there was USA Jobs where you had to, you know, they were posted in other ways and it was all very dispersed how jobs were
announced.
It
was practically impossible to find openings then. It really was.
It was. But now it's on one website and people think it's a single application process, a single employer, but it's really not. It's a couple of hundred federal agencies with their own personnel departments. And when you look at the size of the federal executive branch and the number of offices, personnel offices in places where you could get employed, it isn't, you know, it ain't that broken. It's a very large employer with multiple entry points into the system. It's not like everybody gets hired through OPM. You can get hired from 200 different agencies.
Right. And just like they have their own hiring process, the culture of each agency is very different as private sector employers are. Everything from the average age of people to their change friendliness to their, you know, encouragement of teamwork. Everything is different in each agency, and sometimes even within the different offices of different agencies.
Yeah. So now, having sort of highlighted the wrap on what's wrong with the system, there is proposed legislation out there, at least in the Senate. There's the Federal Hiring Process Improvement Act of 2010. And it's not a surprise, is it, that there would be another congressional interest in improving the federal hiring process. And there was also the president issued a memorandum back last month about improving the federal recruitment and hiring process. And you're up on both. So what are the major ideas out there in the congressional bill and then from the administration on improving the recruitment and hiring process?
I think the bill comes mostly off of the memorandum or executive order, and it's basic things like the things that we've been talking about that are wrong with the system to fix it. They want to cut it down to about 80 days to hire somebody. They want to remove those reviled KSAs. They want more communication between the agencies and applicants. So it's really all the common sense things that we have been talking about that if they're actually put into action would be really a paradigm shift that would register 10 on the Richter scale.
how do you think they could get that done? Like, when you think of the number of applications that come in, even before there was the recession in the private sector and the enormous unemployment that's forcing people into, you know, look for positions anywhere, and has increased substantially the number of federal applications. If you don't have KSAs, how do they weed them out? What's the plan to weed out and differentiate between maybe a couple of hundred applications? Or you told me before the show that you'd anecdotally heard that entry-level positions are getting 10,000 applications.
Yeah,
how do you weed them out?
Just the way the private sector manages to do it and has managed to do it for decades, with a cover letter, a resume, and an interview. And so right now, applications, the online applications, don't accept cover letters. There's just no place to put them. So the cover letters haven't been in the system for quite a while. But this would bring back the cover letters. And you would be amazed, if you've ever screened applications, how much you can tell on a cover letter. It's really tough to write a compelling, concise summary, less than one page, of your best stuff. And it is a great way to evaluate people.
So subjective, though.
Everything is to a certain degree subjective.
But isn't that the point of the KSAs? I actually, a couple weeks ago, I was in the company of a head of personnel from a small agency, and we were talking about getting rid of the KSAs, and I was all rah, rah, rah. And the personnelist was like, well, they actually perform a function because there's things that trained personnel look for in these essays to figure out, do you really have what it takes to qualify for the job?
Uh-huh.
And she said that without the KSAs, when you think of the number of applications they get in, the job of the personnelist becomes a little bit more difficult because it's all in the cover letter, and the differentiation of qualifications becomes a little bit harder. I don't think she's an advocate of the KSAs, but that's the way they're going to, is that the way they're going to figure out who your best? That's the replacement for the KSAs is the cover letter.
Really? Oh, but you can almost get the information you want from the KSAs into a resume in a briefer format, a bullet that just states what the success was. Thinking of it from a practical viewpoint, if a job draws even dozens of applications and there's five essays in each application, and there's two pages or three pages for each essay, And the hiring manager should have filled the position yesterday. How much time do you really think each essay gets? Not a lot. I think it's better to be honest that nobody has the time to shovel through an application that was long enough to be Princess Diana's wedding train. And this is by shortening, and it's a much more practical, logistic way. And also, I would say that if they do keep the KSA, it's because I'm sure that some agencies will just make shorter questions with a window on the application to fill it in. A big problem is that people don't know what makes a good answer. And they're flailing around in the dark thinking, I'm not doing this right. Somebody else who's less qualified is doing it better and stealing my future. And that's a very bad mental place to be. Mm-hmm. So one of my prime suggestions really is for applications to give samples of successful applications in the field for which the job is involved. There's no agency that does that. I do that in my book. I give a lot of examples of that came from actual winning applications from people that I coach, changed the name and all of that. So if you want some samples, How to Land a Top-Paying Federal Job has them, and also templates for writing resumes that make them look beautiful with minimal effort.
Okay, so what you're saying is the KSAs are going to get replaced by better resumes and cover letters.
Right. And I think there should be samples of those things, too, on agency websites.
And let's all anticipate that there won't be, at least for quite a while. So in the interim, people who are interested, they can actually take a look at your book. We're going to stop Lily and take our mid-show break. You're listening to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
And now, a word from our good friends at GEICO, where you could save 15% on car insurance. By now, you've no doubt seen those car insurance commercials with the talking gecko on TV. He's always talking about how people could save 15% or more switching to GEICO. Well, that sounds like a pretty good deal in and of itself. But get this. If you're an employee of the federal government, you may be eligible to save even more than that. That's something the gecko didn't mention in all those commercials. And you've probably heard many times about how many people have switched to GEICO. Millions. But what you might not know is how many people stay with GEICO once they've switched. In fact, on average, GEICO customers who are federal employees have stayed with the company for over 20 years. Now that's customer satisfaction. Sound like a good deal to you? Then just call GEICO at 1-800-947-AUTO or go online to geico.com and find out how much you could save.
I'm Bill Bransford, host of Fed Talk and partner at the law firm of Shaw, Bransford & Roth. Fed Talk brings you inside information on hot topics in the federal community. From the halls of Congress to federal agencies, get the latest on the laws, regulations, and activities that directly impact federal employees. Tune into Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, as we bring in the experts to bring you inside the issues.
Welcome back to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Deborah Roth. I'm here with federal career coach Lily Whiteman. She is the author of How to Land a Top-Paying Federal Job. You can find Lily's book on her website, igotthejob.net. If you have a question or a comment for Lily, give us a call toll-free. We're at 1-877-936-9333. You can email your question to us at FedTalk@federalnewsradio.com. So, Lily, before we took a break, we were talking about some of the legislation that's been proposed to improve the federal hiring process. There's also an executive memo put out by the president. And so we covered the big one, which is like the bane of everybody's existence. Why I don't have a federal job. I mean, I don't have the patience to write the KSAs. I don't even understand it.
Well, I'd be happy to help you offline on that.
Right. 20 years practicing law. I think I'll make a change. But there's some other proposed changes that would take effect if the legislation passed. One of the things that I thought was really interesting, and I'm a skeptic about the ability of the government to pull it off, was a requirement that OPM keep sort of a comprehensive inventories of individuals, applications that came in that were unsuccessful, and an inventory that what agencies could draw from?
Yeah, kind of registries that agencies could draw from or within the same agency. And that's just so to make it easier for the hiring agencies to find people who are well qualified, but for whatever reason wasn't the one pick for another opening, and gives hiring managers more selection and makes it easier for applicants so they don't have to keep applying over and over for similar jobs.
But what do we think about the government's ability to really keep an inventory that's user friendly to the agencies? I mean, when you think of the number of applications that are now coming into the government,
right?
That just seems overwhelming.
Well, I think that's one place where online features would help. You know, databases, computer databases, are way easier to keep than hard copy databases.
So it would be by job series, people. You know,
I think so.
People applying by job series. So and they'd have to figure out a way to store by job series, by grade level. And
you can be skeptical about the whole thing, because the whole overhaul, because these things have been suggested by many administrations previously. As I mentioned, there's been reports, blue ribbon panels, conferences, everything about this for years and years and years. But the difference is that these kind of changes have never had the support and personal attention from the president before, and from an OPM director, John Barry, who's a really vigorous, aggressive change maker.
He is.
So, and they've gotten, the fact that they've got on this relatively early in President Obama's term is another indication of their seriousness about it. I'm sure it'd be difficult to enforce, because the government is a large labyrinth of commissions, agencies, boards, you know, all kinds of different organizations all over the country. But, you know, even if they get to a majority of the organizations that are hiring aggressively, that would be a huge improvement.
And then the last big ticket item on the reform, the proposed reform, are the job announcements. And you had talked about that sort of earlier at the show.
Right. The job announcements are awful in terms of the bureaucratic language they use and the length of them and the accuracy of them. Frequently, they're just recycled from a previous job application and don't even match the opening at all. And the language is really off-putting. My favorite bureaucratic phrase is, these are for jobs that are sedentary at a desk, and they're called your tour of duty instead of your work day. I mean, you can easily think you're being recruited into the military with that one.
Right.
And
You do. You think you're going into the military.
Right.
Well, but the government, they have this government speak, call it, that, you know, has been out there for longer than I've been practicing law. And I guess to an outsider, they're like, what?
Right. But I will say, on the optimistic viewpoint, there is a strong movement within the government to go to reader-friendly plain language, the Plain Language Action Committee. And there's a Plain Language Center. And I used to work for one of the organizations that Vice President Gore's Plain Language program. So I know that. And there's a bill in Congress about plain language in government, too. So that is another positive development.
So for you, the announcement gets improved when, number one, it's accurate.
Right.
Number two, it's in plain language.
Right.
And three,
short and concise.
And of course, frankly, for most job applications, if they put the job title and the job series and where it was in the government, I'm not sure there's much more to know, because the job series and the job title and where it is tells you an enormous amount of information.
Absolutely.
Because that's the whole point of a system, I think, that's worked well for decades, the general schedule and the job classifications.
But even the same job title in two agencies can vary quite a bit. For example, the agency I work for is very progressive in going towards... I'm a public affairs specialist, is very aggressive towards going to the new media and videos and getting away from the traditional print.
Print, yeah.
And I know there's many agencies who were churning out press releases just as they did in the 1950s. So my job description would be very different from a job description in another agency.
But don't you think you could do your job description in 3 or 4 sentences?
You know, I'll give them a half a page just to be just to be magnanimous. But
right.
Yes, it can be brief and concise.
Right. So So that's the federal hiring reform. I actually agree with you. I do think that this administration and this Congress are serious. They mean business. You know, for people who've been in this town, you know, longer than one administration, it's not news that it's tried and failed before. It's, you know, it hasn't failed. There have been slight improvements. USA Jobs.
Right.
You know, there is a way now to actually know who's hiring
right.
for what position.
Right.
So I agree with you. You know, only something good can come out of it, even if it's incremental.
Right.
I don't think that, you know, in November when these changes are supposed to take place, applying for a government job is instantly going to be as easy as filling out the easy tax form. But we're moving in the right direction at a good pace.
Yeah. And for people who apply, you know, I think it's just going to have the effect without the KSAs. It's just going to increase the number of applicants. So I
right.
think in the HR departments, there's going to be the get acquainted period between the new process for applying and how the HR departments actually handle them. Because I was hearing last year that the government, you know, in certain places, they were averaging like 200 to 300 applications for every job announcement, up from like 20 or 30 before the recession. And then you told me you heard 10,000.
For entry-level positions, the higher up the career ladder you get, the fewer applications. But the fact is that the government has been an oasis of hiring, and that has drawn people to the government who never would have considered it before. And also President Obama's pledge to make it cool to work for the government again, that whole new energy that came in with the new administration has contributed as well.
So I think with the new the reforms, when they go in place, I think you'll see even more applications. And I do feel sorry for the hiring departments. They have to figure out how to process that kind
right.
of quantity.
Right.
So that sort of leads me to the obvious question, Lily. What's your advice to people when it's either 10,000, somewhere between a couple of hundred and 10,000 applications for the same job? What are your tips for setting people apart? How do you get set apart so you stand out and at least make the initial, and we should explain to people the process. There's the initial cut, the qualified list. And in many agencies, the higher up you go, you have to go through an interview panel and then the final list.
One aspect of the application process we haven't discussed is that many applications have short answer questions that are either tiered or yes, no, or check the boxes kind of thing. So that also gives agencies a way to quickly evaluate applications because they're on a point system. And the gist of those questions is that you have to give yourself the highest level rating for a job for each question that you possibly can. You want to pick the answer that reflects the most senior level of responsibility. And many people judge themselves too harshly and downrate themselves just out of fear or false modesty. And I tell people that to troll their background from start to finish, because your answer doesn't necessarily have to reflect your current or most recent job. And evaluate yourself liberally, because there's nothing on the applications that say not to. For example, mm-hmm. If they ask you if you speak if you've taken a class in French, suppose it's some kind of international job, and you never took a class in French, but you lived in France, or you taught yourself French, or you're from a French family, so you'd check yes, because it's comparable experience. Or they ask you if you supervise people and you supervise one intern one summer. Yeah, you still did it. So troll your background, judge yourself liberally. And if you can't give yourself the highest rating for almost all the questions, go on to another application.
That is really good advice. Because what you're really saying to people is don't fake it. Don't make it up. Don't make
right.
up experience you didn't have. But think really deeply about the experience you do have and try to apply it. And if you don't have all the top points, why waste your time
right.
applying? Because you know HR is only going to pull the top scores.
Right, exactly. And
that's very good advice.
You've captured one of my philosophies beautifully, in that I work on the basis of you don't have to lie. If you just describe your credentials in impressive ways and accurately reflecting the full level of responsibility you've had, you will outshine the liars. Because most people, I've seen so many smart, accomplished people who you look at their resume and you'd get no idea of all the grand things they've been doing from the resume. So don't lie. Just really seriously evaluate what you do have to offer and learn how to convey it in compelling terms.
I do want to pick your brain on some other good tips on how to stand out in the hiring process, because today more than ever, with the number of applications coming in and the reforms to the process to make it easier, I see it. I just see a floodgate. You really do want to find a way to stand out, and we're going to ask you for some other tips, but we do need to take our final break of the show and hear a word from our sponsor. You're listening to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
And now, a word from our good friends at GEICO, where you could save 15% on car insurance. When you say that you work for the federal government, many people out there immediately picture you wearing a suit, driving a government-issue sedan, and living in D.C. While that may be true for some, in reality, federal employees have a wider variety of jobs than most people could ever imagine, from postal workers to CIA agents, from working in an office to working in outer space. These jobs are all so different that it's hard to believe they have something in common, but they do. And that similarity is GEICO. As employees of the federal government, many of these people may be eligible for additional discounts on top of GEICO's already low rates. And just because the cost is lower doesn't mean that GEICO's service is anything less than top rate. So whether you're in animal control or air traffic control, call GEICO at 1-800-947-AUTO. Or go online to geico.com and find out how much you could save.
Welcome back to Fed Talk. I'm Deborah Roth, and I'm here. My guest today is Lily Whiteman. She is a federal career coach and author of How to Land a Top-Paying Federal Job. For more information about Lily's book, you can find it on her website, igotthejob.net. We're in our last segment of the show, and there's a couple more things I want to cover with Lily. She only gets here once a year, so we have more to talk about. And for our listeners, I think we're really at a good point in the show, because everybody wants to know a little bit of free advice from the expert. And they know they're competing. That's no secret. They know today they're competing against hundreds, I guess. You know, frankly, if they, you know, really thought about it, they probably realize they're competing against thousands of people for every job announcement now in the government. And you gave us one example of how to stand out sort of at the very front end. Give us some more examples of what you think really makes an applicant stand out.
I've read in the papers examples of, in the private sector, people doing wacky things to stand out, like showing up on the hiring manager's birthday with a birthday cake, or putting their application on paper as bright as disco lights, things like that. And I really don't go for those gimmicks at all.
Yeah, I don't think the federal employer would go for those gimmicks.
And a lot,
I think they think it was creepy.
Yeah, right. The stalkers are out there.
Right.
And I've also heard people give interviewing advice like imitate your interviewer and breathe when they breathe and fold your hands like they do. I think those things are ridiculous.
I think they're creepy.
Yeah, if somebody started imitating me, monkey see, monkey do, I'd go, what is that? I think the best way to stand out is to do the traditional things and do them really well. And one of the most important of those is researching the needs and anticipating the needs of the hiring agency and proving you can fill them. Proving that you're a problem solver and will solve their problems instead of being a problem. And an example of that would be somebody I coached who he basically created his own job by contacting EPA, had very strong environmental credentials, contacting EPA and one of the office directors that deals with mountaintop removal, which is a controversial method of mining. And he showed them how, with a certain type of data analysis that he could produce, that it would be a lot easier to track what was going on with mountaintop removal. And he said it took a few months and some calls and some maneuvers, but he got the job, and he would have never gotten if he didn't create it himself.
Hmm.
I've heard of other people in interviews, for example, basically suggesting gingerly, softly, and in a way that answered questions they were asked, but making suggestions on how to improve their outreach activities. And that, again, is studying the website and the speeches and the press releases of the organization and anticipating their needs. Another example, a former colleague of mine in an interview was asked how to, she was going for an HR position and she was asked how to, no, actually she wasn't asked. It was just mentioned in the interview that they were having problems motivating people who had topped out of their promotion potential. And it was just mentioned, and she was not asked about it. And then when she was called back for a second interview, she came with a whole plan of regulations that, using regulations that existed already, of how to motivate promotion people who had topped out. And she was told going into that interview that she was, not to get too hopeful, there was a lot of competition, and there was a job offer on her phone line when she got home from that job.
Wow.
So really showing that you're thinking, and going to solve their problems and care about their agency, even if you don't, you've got to show that you care. Those are the ways to stand out.
And, you know, to me, I always say this, and maybe people are tired of hearing me say it, but for most young people today who apply and they're in an interview, they always talk about what they want the job to do for them.
Right.
And, you know, what they're looking to get out of the job. And maybe back in the old economy, employers sort of, you know, siphoned off that kind of chat. In today's economy, with the number of applicants that are out there, both in the public and private sector, I think if you go in an interview and you talk about what you want to get out of the job, most employers are like, next.
Right.
Because it's not what you, this is what do you bring to the table? What are you going to do for the employer?
It's like, it's a form of sales. So if you go into a store and want to buy something, and the salesman who is sort of equal to the customer who's equal to you, hears from the salesman what he wants out of the sale, he's not going to get the sale. It's what you want, and what kind of shoes, what kind of dress you want. And if you say, I want a beach outfit, and they give you an evening gown, they're not, you know, it's not going to happen. So it's all about selling yourself in a compelling way.
Now, backing up to the earlier part of the process, because we talked about, right, you know, the electronic application where you self-score, and then we talked about the interview. Any tips for resume writing, cover letters, about standing out when they've got 200, 300, 400 different cover letters and resumes they're going to about to look at?
Show energy, show zest. If you're coming in from outside the government, say why you want to work for the government. And in your resume should just be each, not a job description, descriptions of your successes on the job with the most relevant successes.
Not a job description.
Don't cut and paste from your job description. Say, don't make a long, a job description is like somebody's to-do list. It's boring and it doesn't show what you did. So each job summary, I don't want description, use the word description, should be a bulleted list of your achievements and the achievements that are most relevant to your target job are the ones that should be up top, even if you spent less time on them or you liked other things better, because you want to hit them with your best stuff up top.
Which might mean that you might have to redo your resume depending upon what job you apply for.
Absolutely. Your resume should be as targeted as a torpedo, which those registries we talked about before would make it hard to do that, because they're just kind of generic applications.
And anything about the cover letter, other than telling them, if you're private sector, why you want to come in? What about people who are already in the federal system?
Again, research your organization. Indicate that you know something about them. Here's a simple way. If they won a recent award or are doing great in the presidential management agenda, congratulate them on that as an opening sentence. Have a zesty opening sentence. Don't say, please consider this application. I found your announcement in the newspaper. Who cares how you found the announcement?
Right.
Go in showing that you're energetic. You can even say, I thrive in a fast-paced environment. Just show some zest in life. And people often think that government applications, because they're government, have to be written in that horrible gov speak we talked about and should be as boring as a piece in the Federal Register. People in the final analysis are going to review your resume, and they respond to the same thing that every other person does, is energy, the things that I've listed already.
Right, intrigue and interest.
Yeah.
You want to get them reading from the beginning, and they certainly don't want to see boilerplate.
And, you know, I've seen people leave out their top applications. It should cover your best applications. I just saw a resume the other day that the applicant had an MBA, which is an outstanding credential, and it was on the 10th page of his resume. And I know he wouldn't have put it in a cover letter if there had been. So you got to get your best stuff up top. And a summary of qualifications in a resume is a great way to do that.
In the resume.
Yeah.
In the resume. Okay. Very, you know, I'm not looking for a job, but it was like I'm all of a sudden inspired. And of course, the other thing people want to know is, where are the jobs right now in the federal system? What kinds of jobs? Who's hiring? I mean, we know government's growing, or the executive branch is growing incrementally. But what do you hear? What's the word?
I'll answer that question in a second. I just want to add something to the previous one about cover letters. A great technique is to have a little table that says your needs, my skill, my experience, and cite from the announcement what they're looking for, and then in a sentence say why you have that skill. And that is such a fast read and an impressive read. It's a great technique. Okay,
and it really shows you're paying attention.
Right.
You know, it really shows, you know, that's one thing about the modern workplace, which wasn't the workplace 20, 30 years ago when many of us started working, was the pace and the ability to collect and process information and execute as quickly as you need to do today. I mean, I was just sort of reflecting back upon that 20 years ago. There's no such thing as email. People, if you wanted to talk to me, you actually had to call and get through. I could be on the phone. I mean, now people just send an email. They expect an instantaneous response. So what the average professional needs to do in any field today requires a whole lot more movement of information. And I like your idea of the chart, because that's a great way to boom, boom, boom.
Right. And like I said, when a hiring manager has an application stack up to the ceiling, you want to do things that are a fast read.
Fast read. Fast and interesting.
And even the format of a table would make it stand out.
Yeah. No, that's a great idea. Okay, so where are the federal jobs these days?
Well, if you go on USA Jobs, you'll see that
there's a gazillion.
There's a gazillion jobs. But I tell people some of the best spots are going to be in new agencies that have recently formed or will be forming, because obviously they've got to hire a staff. And if you're current Fed and want to do a detail, those are great targets too. And you can get something called the Yellow Book, which is very expensive, but it's in many libraries and in government libraries.
The federal Yellow Book.
Right.
Yeah.
And
it is very expensive. It's a fabulous tool.
Right. So you can get it from libraries. And it has the name and contact information of every muckety-muck in every agency. So you can cold call them, send them your resume, and do the things we said to stand out, because many openings are never make it on USA Jobs. And you can create your own jobs, like the EPA example I gave before.
Yeah. Any other insights about what kinds of jobs or where they are?
The biggest one is procurement. There's a huge shortage of procurement. So that's a great entry place. And also there's a lot of other anticipated openings. IT security is a huge one that there's shortages of, and accountants. But on the website of the Partnership for Public Service, they have a report where the jobs are, so that gives a more complete list than we have time for.
Oh, good.
Here.
Thank you. We have less than a minute left. One or two tips on negotiating new federal salaries.
The foremost important words in the English language to you might be, is the salary negotiable? Because you got to ask for what you want.
And you're saying, so you have to start off by asking.
Yes. The offer they will give, and I've heard this straight from HR people in the government, the offer they will give you is a low ball, usually. And if you take it, fine. But if you ask for more, and you know what your range is from the opening, you are, they will likely come back with a counteroffer. And you won't lose the offer by asking for more money. All they can do is say no.
That's the best advice ever. Lily Whiteman, it's always great having you on the show. For people interested in her book, get on igotthenet.net.
We look forward. Igotthejob.net.
Igotthejob.net. We look forward to seeing